Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
We did it. you're noticing, listeners, you just only heard two voices, and that's because Sammy's not here this week. We absolutely hate to deliver this news to you. We know you hate to hear it. We're sad. And is this like violating her privacy that I'm going to say?
It's a HIPAA violation.
I'm about to HIPAA violation, which is to say, you guys, it happened. It fucking happened. Sammy has COVID.
She got COVID. She's been talking about it nonstop.
She was the true final girl, as we all knew her to be. Mm-hmm. And it fucking got her. And she's doing fine. She's on the mend. But I can't believe it got her. I truly thought it never would.
I know. I thought she was immune. It's devastating because she had to miss one of her best friend's weddings.
She had to miss a wedding. She was being so careful. You all heard her talk about it's a weird thing about doing a podcast, which is it's like a weird time capsule of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so in listening back to last week's episode, you know, a few days after we recorded it and hearing Sammy say, you know, I'm trying not to get COVID, and then listening to it in real time being like, and I know she does have COVID. It's just like so weird to be like, oh, I know. That didn't work out.
And she went to go see that vulcanologist documentary.
Oh my God, she sobbed through her mask.
She kept that goddamn mask on for 2 hours.
She didn't need to. I mean, I guess she did need to because she had COVID. But it was before she was contagious, probably. Probably.
Yeah, let's hope for the best.
We're all doing our best. It got her. It just got her. And we wish her the best, and she'll be back, and we love her so much. And, you know, send her... luck, is that what we're doing now?
Yeah,
we're sending luck. But Henley, how about you? Did anything scary happen to you this week?
Did anything scary happen to me? Well, I'm just in a constant state of confronting different things that are scary in my life.
Wow.
One of them being TikTok.
Okay, sure.
So the news about TikTok is worse than expected.
Yeah, we all knew it was bad. It's been like, of course it's bad. It is. Yeah, it's bad.
But it's worse than even I knew. So obviously TikTok has decimated my attention span. I'm fully addicted to it. I use it to wind down, disassociate, disengage.
Using
at all times.
Like crazy 30-second internet videos to wind down is like, we are so deranged, but we're I do fucked. The same thing. Anyway, absolutely keep going.
So this article came out a while ago, but Ezra Klein wrote an op-ed. People have a lot of feelings about Ezra Klein, but I feel like I like him generally. Okay. And you can come at me in the comments if you disagree.
Yeah, come at her.
But he wrote about how, you know, TikTok is owned by Chinese parent company ByteDance, and they are 100% going to harness the power of the platform to like shape global policy, because all of us are just watching videos constantly and having our minds changed and not realizing it.
And like the power of the algorithm is actually terrifying, because they can just continue to show you the same, like basically evangelize to us and like... Yeah, it's
okay,
not good.
So this is an example. So they've already hired approximately like 150 Russian micro-influencers.
Micro-influencers.
To talk about the war on Ukraine positively.
Oh, God.
Positively.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And these are normal like beauty influencers who are just doing like their makeup,
no.
whatever. You know? And so this is the kind of shit I'm talking about.
Oh,
it's
that's
dangerous.
So bad.
I'm terrified.
No, no.
And I still can't stop watching.
But like, what about my animal videos? Nobody's telling me about the war in Ukraine and those. It's, you know.
Yeah. Everyone just,
I'm just looking at like cats sneeze and stuff. Like that can't be bad.
That's cute.
How could that be bad?
It can't be bad, but it can be.
Oh no.
If used incorrectly. Anyway, so I just want everyone to be aware, and I'm stressed. But
yeah.
Oh well.
All right. Well,
what a fun moment in history we're living through.
Stay vigilant. Oh, it's tough. It's things are bad. We know that to be true.
Mm-hmm. Emily, okay, bring us back though.
I'm gonna make a hard left.
Good.
And I'm gonna say that. Oh, not a lot is like going on with me because as I mentioned, I'm in school. So that's taking up a lot of my time and energy. So I was really racking my brain to be like, what did I even do this week? What am I going to talk about? And what I have done this weekend, which is absolutely insane to me, is I have stayed up until 1 a.m. two nights in a row, which is like,
my goodness.
What? I love to be in my bed by 10:30. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite thing. On a weekend, maybe I make it to midnight and I'm like, look at that. She really did it. 1 a.m. two nights in a row. Absolutely, absolutely insane. We had a going away little
hang.
Socialized. Oh my God. You think I'm staying up until 1 a.m. just like hanging out?
I mean, yes.
No, if there's a bed nearby, I'm in it. So we had a little going away thing one night. And then honestly, last night was just, we had dinner with friends and then like made our way. We like walked home and stopped in like a few places along the way. Anyway, I just don't know. It's crazy to me. But what that has meant is, you know, by the time you're home and getting ready for bed, you're hungry again. Mm. You got to have a snack.
Uh-oh. Is the heartburn raging?
No, actually. I saw a gastroenterologist a couple weeks ago. I've been prescribed an 8-week course of some acid reducers. So far, so good. If anybody was wondering. So far, so good on that front. But no, I'm going to talk about a new late night snack that Joel and I have invented that is psychotic. It's not. It's actually perfect. It's a perfect snack, but we are psychotic. So it's what it is. Have you ever had Popcorners chips? They serve them on planes.
Oh,
they're a triangle chip made out of popcorn and they have a kettle corn flavor, which is a little salty, a little sweet. Had them on a plane once, had to buy them. And so it's the snack is it's just a bowl with Popcorners kettle corn chips and shredded cheddar cheese on them. And we call it cheddar sweets.
Is it melted?
Nope. We don't have a microwave. So it's just cold cheese on top of kettle corn chips. And we call it cheddar sweets. And we love it. And every night this weekend, we've been like, ooh, time for cheddar sweets. Just like two fucking freaks walking around their house at 1 a.m. being like, cheddar sweets, cheddar sweets. Like excited for our little stupid snack. Anyway, I don't know. I guess like we're also not doing great, I suppose. But in another way, we are thriving.
No. This is another reason you guys are the perfect couple.
Thank you so much.
You guys found each other.
We found each other and we found cheddar sweets and we'll have it again and again. And I don't care you know what? Don't knock it till you try it. That's all I'm going to say.
I agree with that. I won't. I don't want
people
to try
it. Cheddar popcorn with kettle corn.
It's the cold shredded cheese that's really turning me off. I don't think I want to eat cold shredded cheese in any context.
Oh, really?
Ever.
This came out. Because one of my other favorite late night snacks is just shredded cheese out of a bag.
Okay.
There's something really satisfying about, and I'm talking thick cut. Although I will fuck with
it.
I will.
Does not make it better. Doesn't make it better. It's gross.
How is it gross? It's just cheese.
It's like I don't know. If you're shredding it yourself, almost that would be better.
That
it's like
would
the pre-shredded.
Insane.
It's like meant to be melted, you know? That's why
sure,
it's shredded.
But
so
it's
you
also,
can melt it
it's
easier.
Also just cheese.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we're overthinking this. I'm overthinking it. I'm feeling inspired that
it's
you can
fun,
have a late night snack.
You just pour it right into your hand. Anyway, so that's what's up. I guess that's another thing about when you talk to people about a thing you do, you get to see it through their eyes. And that happens a lot on this podcast. I'll say a thing that I think is maybe a little weird, but not so weird. And then the reception I get is like, well, no, that's actually really weird. So I don't know. Come at me in the comments. Let me know if you eat shredded cheese out of the bag. And maybe you should try it. Just saying.
Okay. Ugh, trying to connect it to this week's movie. Yeah, failing utterly, completely. Do not have a segue.
Well, you were very brave this week, Henley. You were very brave this week because we always have to flip a coin of who has to watch the movie when Sammy's not here. And you really stepped up for us this week, and I appreciate it.
Well, the movie this week, first of all, I should say, wasn't scary at all. So I really lucked out.
Really? Okay.
It
interesting.
Was not scary. No. Yeah, again, very lucky. Dodged a real bullet here. But this week's movie is The Dead Zone. It came out in 1983. It's based on the novel by Stephen King.
Uh-oh.
It's directed by David Cronenberg and written by Jeffrey Boehm. I think that's how you say his last name. It's starring Christopher Walken, Brooke Adams, Tom Skerritt, Herbert Lom, and Martin Sheen.
Wow.
And it's available to watch on HBO Max.
Wow. Cronenberg, not scary. I'm interested to hear about this. And thankfully, we are joined by some guests who are going to help us make our way through this, I guess, not scary movie. Who's to say? We'll find out from fellow HeadGum podcast, Hey Riddle Riddle. We are so delighted to have JPC and Adel. Hello.
Hello. Cheddar Sweet sounds terrible.
Hello. Okay, well.
Yeah, Cheddar Sweet.
I know two people who disagree pretty strongly.
I have a sweet little snack. It's taking cantaloupe and dumping mustard on it, and it's something I call... Mm-hmm. No, it's... I'm joking.
Oh, God.
I think I'd almost rather see two... Like a couple having a huge fight than having a see a couple
no,
enjoying
that is
cheddar
sweets. The idea that anyone could see us with our cheddar sweets is like there's like nothing more horrifying. We're very aware that like it's fucked up. Like it's like I'd rather people watch a sex tape of us than watch us eat cheddar sweets.
Emily, that's why I love that you told us it's so intimate. It's such an intimate detail.
Yeah,
cheddar sweets is the most vulnerable thing I've ever
heard.
I'm an open book.
I also love when Henley was talking about TikTok as a recent talkaholic myself.
Ooh, yeah.
There was almost a little mini TikTok happening where Henley was describing something and Emily, you were going, oh no, oh no. And I was like, this is the whole thing. This is what it is.
We're doing a duet, which is like, as you say that, I'm like, oh yeah. Like the thing about TikTok, I watch it, but the idea of making one, I can't understand how anyone could. And you said that, I was like, oh, that's what a lot of them are.
I would say one in five videos I watch has that in the background, the, oh no.
Oh, that's
and now
all,
it just,
yeah, yeah,
and now
yeah.
It just goes through my head ad nauseum.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for being here. The question we always start with is, do you guys like horror movies? What's your feeling about horror movies?
We do actually have to know, though, if anything scary happened to you this week.
Okay, all right, let's start with that.
Okay, all right, fine.
Fine. Fine.
Okay, so we'll start with that question, and then we'll have some time to think about the other question.
Your answers.
Well, I guess something, I don't know if it was necessarily scary that happened to me, but it was certainly shocking. My wife and I woke up this morning and I asked her if we had like ingredients to make breakfast in the fridge. And she opened the fridge and I guess maybe at some point yesterday she had put like a jug of iced coffee on its side in the fridge and it had just leaked out all into the fridge. So we spent we spent like 35 minutes this morning instead of making breakfast, taking all of the drawers and stuff out of the fridge and cleaning it. And at first it was like, oh my God, this thing. But I love cleaning.
Wow.
So like when we were like, I was like, oh no, I think we have to clean the entire fridge. I think everything has to come out and get wiped out.
I guess we have no choice.
Uh-oh, it looks like we have to take all the drawers out and like clean them individually. So it was like shocking to see that because both of us didn't know what. Like it was like someone had like shaken something up in the fridge and just let it like explode. There's just iced coffee everywhere in there. But then it turned out to be very satisfying.
Did you have to throw out all your food?
No, most of everything was in a container, so everything needed to be like wiped down.
Loose
but there
food
wasn't
in
any
your
like
fridge.
I feel like I have a lot of like loose produce. You know.
Sure.
Lying
okay.
Around.
Sure. Sure.
My wife just went to the grocery store yesterday and like the produce was still in produce bags. So none of our produce was like out or whatever. We didn't have to throw anything out. We just had to like wipe a lot of things down. And then it was too late And we were both too hungry to make breakfast. So I was like, why don't we just order breakfast instead? So,
what a great morning.
Sounds like a win all around. Yeah.
Yeah. It turned out to be a big win, but it was a shock. And that's probably that when you said scary, that was the first thing that came to mind. So that's about as used to being scared as I am.
I love that. Also, ordering breakfast, it feels like such a little indulgence. Anytime I do it, I'm like, I mean, this is a meal you don't even have to eat, technically.
It's a luxury.
I'm ordering for it? Okay.
Anytime I order food that I know how to cook and can make myself, I feel a little bad. But like breakfast is one of those things where it just makes me feel kind of
a real treat.
Like, I'm like, I have all of these things in my house. I could just make this right now, but someone else made it for me.
All right, Adel, how are we doing?
Adel, what about you?
It wasn't in the last week. It was probably in the last 10 days, but I'm someone who stays up until like 4 or 5 a.m. typically.
Oh my god.
I'm a bit of a night owl. And I was, so maybe like 10 days ago or so, I was up late watching, someone turned me on to the show Evil on Paramount Plus.
I've watched it. Yes.
Which is pretty good.
I have seen
pretty
it.
Good. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching that. It was probably like 2 or 2:30 in the morning, and my porch light on my house was off. I never really leave it on. And I, out of the corner of my eye, through the window that leads to that shows like the area of the porch, I saw a flashlight kind of swinging back and forth. Like, and I was like, is someone jogging with a headlamp? Or like, I didn't know.
That's too late to be jogging. Yeah.
You'd be surprised.
But it's appropriate to have a headlamp if you're going to be jogging.
That's true, but very scary.
Yes.
Someone was spelunking and ended up in Chicago.
Where am I?
But I was so confused by the light, and it was getting closer and closer, and then it was absolutely 100% on my porch, and then it disappeared. And so I was like, I need to go investigate this. So I kind of waited until I no longer saw the flashlight. I went out onto my porch, and it was is that Amazon apparently delivers at all hours at sometimes.
No, that is fucked up.
My God. It was a drone?
No, it was a human.
It was a drone.
I don't think it was a drone. No, I think it was a human.
Oh, it was a human.
But they
okay.
had a flashlight because they had to they have to take a picture of it or something, like on the porch. So it was like a weird thing of like someone do they contract people out? Do they like, I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but someone in the middle of the night delivered a package on my porch and used a flashlight and a flash on their phone.
That feels like that makes that job far too high risk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're like walking up to people's homes at 2 a.m. with a flashlight. Like that's you can't be doing that.
There have been many, I feel like many exposés about how Amazon really mistreats their workers, but that's new. That's a new one.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
They're just like they're doing deliveries 24/7. Also like, no, thank you. Please do not come up to my porch at 3 a.m. with a package.
And if
I will say I did not need it at that hour.
Right.
Whatever I had in that package, I did not need. Not at 2 in the morning.
Oh no.
Yeah, unless you're getting like an insulin delivery, I don't think there's any reason
for
it.
Yeah.
And the other question was, what's our relationship to scary movies?
Yes.
So I'll start that. I'll start first in that regard. One of my first memories going to the theater was going to see Never Ending Story, which isn't technically a scary movie, but I remember small bits, but my mom says she had to take me out of the theater at some point because every time Falcor came on, I would scream and cry.
Oh. It's kind of freaky.
Yeah. At first, she moved me to the back of the theater, and then eventually she had to take me out because people were like, please shut up that kid. So that's like my first movie memory is being terrified by Falcor. I don't remember it, but my mom tells me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I grew up, I guess I don't know if that like galvanized me or something, but I more and more could watch grown-up stuff and be okay. And I was maybe like 10, and my parents would watch Twin Peaks when it was airing, and I would just sit on the couch with them and watch it, and I didn't understand murder and all this stuff.
Whoa.
But I would just watch it. And then I saw Beetlejuice probably at like 10 or 11, and which is more horror comedy or dark comedy.
Yeah.
But then it just kind of steamrolled into seeing all these horror films and being totally fine with it and like giddy. It like made me happy, and I love going to like haunted houses, not real haunted houses, but like commercial, you know, Halloween
the
era
experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So at some point I associated horror with like giddiness and like having fun and like being excited.
That's cool.
So I really, from that point on was just like, let's do this. I want to watch every horror film and every scary movie and do it all. So I have a very good relationship with horror films and I love them. Absolutely adore them.
Wow.
I love hearing people's origin stories about when they decided that they loved horror movies. It's so interesting because you can go on either direction.
Right.
A lot of people have that experience and they're like, no, thank you. I'm never watching that content.
I found Beetlejuice used to be too scary when I saw it as a kid. I was like, I don't like this guy.
I will say there was a moment where there's a moment where Beetlejuice, like, snakes pop out of his head.
Yes, I remember that.
And I was a little terrified. And then my mom leaned over and said, "That's the same guy who played Batman." And I had seen Batman. I had seen Michael Keaton's Batman and was obsessed with it. And so I think that instance is that one moment is what gave me permission to be like, this is fun.
What
versus
a great
scary.
Mom move. To be like, I feel like the energy that you're scared. Let me just give you a little bit of information. That's
like
nice.
The minute I was like, oh, that's the actor who played Batman is now acting scary. I was like, this is fun and I can really sit back and enjoy myself. So I think that's when it kind of clicked mentally that scary movies are fun and okay and not something to like be terrified of.
Oh my God. God bless your mom.
Yeah, that's cool.
Doing the Lord's work out there.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm.
It's a wild thing because parents probably like think really hard about like, oh, how do I want to raise my child? And I want to have this intention with raising my child. And then they'll be like, that's the actor that played Batman. And that was like the most pivotal thing that they did.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's terrifying. It's terrifying to be a parent. You have no control.
And I would say I'm pretty ambivalent to the idea of horror movies. I don't necessarily seek them out, but I don't avoid them by the same token. If someone else wants to watch a horror movie, I will watch it. I think my main maybe gripe with horror movies is I think like the genre or the category is sometimes misapplied. It's probably the same with like a lot of comedy movies. I'm like, that was an interesting movie to watch. I wouldn't necessarily say that was a comedy.
Yeah.
And we watched this movie and, you know, it was classified as a horror thriller. And I don't know. I don't feel like I was necessarily scared or thrilled.
I know. I felt the same way. I'm the scaredy cat in the bunch.
Well, this is also Stephen King and Cronenberg. I'm like, so I know. How is it not scary or thrilling?
I mean, maybe it's just because it was from like 83 and maybe like like culturally things have changed for how we are scared or thrilled. But I would say like on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, this is a 1. This is like a vanilla cake, vanilla icing horror movie.
Whoa.
Like there's really not much to it. There may be like a couple parts where you'd be like, ooh, but that's it. That's about it.
OK,
this must have been around the time that Cronenberg did The Brood, which is terrifying. So
yes, that's been recommended to us. And there's got to be a reason.
I feel like maybe he did this film and then people were like amp it up, buddy. And then he did The Brood because, this is pretty tame.
Pretty tame. Is there some body horror?
Yes. There's one specific scene that we will get to, I think, at some point. But
we got to get to it.
Involving some scissors.
So for this movie, then, had you guys not seen it before and you were curious about it?
I'd never seen it. The only relationship I had with this was when I was younger. I used to watch a lot of USA Network.
Oh, sure.
God bless its little soul. And I remember there were certain shows like Parker Lewis Can't Lose and whatever else. And then Dead Zone was one with Anthony Michael Hall. Mm-hmm. And I always saw the trailer or the previews on USA, but I just never watched it. So I that's what I knew it as a TV show. So when JPC was like, the Dead Zone, I was like, the TV show? And he's like, no, it's a movie first. So that was my only relationship with the movie.
Okay. It was a book, movie first, then a TV show.
And I guess I had heard about this movie because it has like a great cast. It's got like
great cast and it's like, well, like the ratings are high on it.
Super high.
It's got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. But again, that must have been from critic reviews that came out when the movie came out, obviously. So, you know, it's I think anything after like 40 years is just going to be a little dated in that regard anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's I don't think. It must not be rated really high as a horror movie. Maybe it's just people like, hey, it's a good movie. I don't know. I mean, I maybe have issues with both of those things. But
wow.
Well, this is 83. This is back when like consumption was scary. Like,
I gotta judge it on its merits. It is from like '83. So this movie came out before I was born. So it's like, you know, I have to judge it there too.
We do, but we have done a lot of movies from the 80s that are very scary, that are quite terrifying and do lean in more to like gore and horror. And this is trying to be more of like a psychological thriller, I think, at the end of the day. And for that reason, I loved it. I loved it.
We loved it.
Oh, I walked in thinking I was going to be forced to watch a completely different movie.
Okay. Like,
I was thinking I was watching a Cronenberg. I was going to be disturbed and not be able to sleep at night. Instead, I just fell into Christopher Walken's deep blue eyes and stayed there for 2 hours.
It's a nice place to be.
This was super fun because it's the first movie I've seen where this is like pre-Christopher Walken being can I curse on this show?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Being like a fucking cartoon character, right. like how Jack Nicholson is, where it's like, right. You want the voice, I'll give you the voice. So when the film started and he was like, hello, it's nice to meet you. My name is Johnny Smith. I was like, what is, oh my God, he's like acting versus
being Christopher Walken,
playing it up.
Yeah,
it was so shocking to see him be, I guess, quote unquote, normal. That's rude to say. Sorry, Christopher Walken.
He is listening.
Yeah, he's a fan, so he's offended.
On the flip side to what Henley was saying, I felt like I was more disappointed in this movie because it wasn't like scary or because I was like, oh, I'm going to do, you know, the scary movie podcast. I should see like a very terrifying movie. Mm-hmm. And I did just end up watching like a very, you know, like safe movie. And I was like, which is fine. But it's just I kind of did want to be like
spooked.
You know, I was expecting like Hereditary. And I got like a normal like child's birthday party where everyone just has a piece of cake and some ice cream. And then we get to go home.
It was great. It was great.
Oh, man. So, Henley, you're just, I mean, your smile is so big. You are so happy to have not had to watch a scary movie.
I will say there's definitely some like children's stuff being threatened.
Okay.
There's definitely some, there's murder. There's intrigue. Let's do trivia. So I'll just give you guys some fun facts about it.
Love it.
So speaking of high ratings, it has a 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, 69% on Metacritic.
Nice.
It had a budget of around $7 million and it made $21 million at the box office. So I'm fine.
Okay.
I guess, you know, for this time, I don't know if that's like that big of a success, but it did well.
$7 million? Was that Gazebo $2 million?
I honestly think it was because when I was reading all the fun facts, like
we're talking about a good gazebo.
It rivals the Gazebo and the Conjuring.
Yeah,
movies,
we love a good gazebo.
And for all the listeners in the South, gazebo.
Gazebo. When I was gathering the IMDb trivia, there were so many points about the gazebo, and I honestly didn't even include them because I was like, who cares about this gazebo? But it was referenced a lot. It was a big deal that they built the gazebo.
It was a big gazebo too. Like it was not
the word gazebo is sounding absolutely insane to me right now. I've never heard it said so many times in a row, and my brain is like, what are we talking about?
For those of you who don't know, a gazebo is the thing that cleans the ice on a hockey rink.
Yeah.
It's
also one of the main characters in Yo Gabba Gabba.
Gazebo.
Yeah, it's a weird word. Anyway.
But the town in Toronto that did build it still exists. So if anyone wants to go visit it, you can go see it. You can get, a lot of people get married there and get their wedding photos in that gazebo.
That's what gazebos, I think, are mainly used for, if I had to guess.
Yes.
I think you're right.
It's a great gazebo at the end of the first Twilight movie. Sorry, keep going.
It's good for a lot of women to faint and then fan themselves.
Mm-hmm. A fainting gazebo.
In like the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if Christopher Walken hadn't been in this, Bill Murray was considered to play
this role.
Wow.
Wild.
Totally would have been very different.
Yeah, I don't know. It was composed by Michael Kamen and recorded by the London National Philharmonic Orchestra at Abbey Road Studios. It's a very intense score, like a full orchestra score.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
During the time that the composer was composing the music for this film, he got lots of complaints from his neighbors, including one note that said, can you please stop playing that music? I can't sleep and it's giving my family nightmares.
Oh, wow.
That feels made up, but that's in IMDb, we don't contest it.
Yeah.
So the director, David Cronenberg, he would fire a gun loaded with blanks off camera to make Christopher Walken flinch when he touches people and he feels things, he flinches. There's a gun being fired off camera to get those realistic flinches.
Can I say that's insane? That's wholly unnecessary.
Yeah. And also, realistic flinches is now my garage rock band name. So hold on, is that, I can't wrap my head around that. Is that the opposite of method acting, or is that method acting?
I think it's the opposite.
Because if you're reacting to a real gun, that's method. But then if you need that to act, it's not method. Is this like a catch 22?
I think it's not, because he's okay. not in the character. He's not reacting to a gun.
Yes. It's the actor. Yeah, fair enough.
It's the same type of acting where you put a bunch of peanut butter in a horse's mouth to make it look like the horse is talking. It's a 1-to-1 of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like how, like if we, when we do trivia for movies, especially in the, like earlier horror movies where, the treatment to, of all people on set was fucking awful. Well, you get a lot of trivia about like the director would like whisper like mean things in their ear to make them really upset. Yeah. And it's like that sort of thing where it's like, I don't know that we have to do that.
Yeah, you're the birds in The Shining, like all the leading ladies being absolutely harassed.
Yeah, it's like maybe don't. That's it's not really acting. And I feel like a flinch, the thing about a flinch is you're surprised, right? Which I think is the effect of the gun. But if you know in the script when it's happening, even if you hear the gun, I'm not surprised. I don't know. I'm just confused by that logic.
Well, I don't know. It worked for Christopher Walken because he was excellent in this film. Great. It was A plus acting. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, it's true.
Talking about Atticus Flinch over here.
Okay, so last one. Speaking of, or actually two more. Speaking of actors having not a great time on set,
a
stuntman was severely burned around the legs and groin when a squib went off too close to him during the shooting of the World War II flashback sequence.
Oh no!
And that was such a short scene. All that for nothing?
So deeply unnecessary. Deeply unnecessary for that to happen.
Terrible.
Squibs are for blood, right? Was there a lot of blood in that scene? I thought it was just like.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
there was almost no blood. Maybe they
cut the scenes because
he got burned and it was.
Oh, that sucks.
But it also sounds like he was. I mean, it burned his groin, so it sounds like they had a scene in there where someone got like shot in the groin.
Yeah, there's a lot more to the doctor's backstory than
unnecessary. Very unnecessary.
I don't love that.
We're wishing the best to that stuntman. Hope you're healing up.
40 years later, 50 years later,
in
I hope
heaven?
You're healing. 40 years
sorry.
Later.
Sorry to that man now in heaven, and I hope he is healing. But it was actually really cool to see, because there was a lot of squibs used in this movie. And it's like, it's really nice to see squib usage in movies, because you just don't see like practical effects anymore. So seeing like, I mean, this is, you know, there's obviously no CGI in this movie. So seeing the practical effects, some of them were pretty bad, but they also looked, it was just like refreshing to see.
Yeah, it's like you can tell when something is really happening, even if it doesn't look like how it would in real life. The fact that it is actually happening, it just adds more depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last thing I'm going to tell you guys is that Johnny's mother, so Christopher Walken's mother, is played by Jackie Burroughs. This actress honestly terrifies me. Mm. She's only 4 years older than Christopher Walken.
Okay.
Wow.
4 years older.
This is like Wilford Brimley, Tom Cruise disease.
Who is? I don't know what the details
are. So there was something where I think it was the last Mission Impossible Tom Cruise did. He was the same age as when Wilford Brimley was in Cocoon, if you've ever seen that movie.
Yes.
And if you look at the pictures, it looks like two different species of
alien.
Well,
I mean, Tom is inhuman.
Tom is untouchable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has the power of Scientology.
That's wild. I mean,
young.
He's 60 years old. He's which I feel like for some people is old and for some people it's not, but that's pretty wild.
I'm still in shock about that statistic that you just said about that actor being
4 years.
4 years older.
Four.
Ugh. Oh, my boy.
Oh, my boy. Yeah, four. I haven't seen it, so I can't picture it. But I really don't love like what that says about.
No.
The, you know, all romantic pairings. The woman's 20 years younger and it's like she's 4 years older. She's his mom. Like, I don't know.
Usually I hate that. Usually I hate and I feel like I'm really sensitive to it where I'm like, oh, that woman is clearly not old enough to be someone's mother. But in this case,
she
looked old to me.
Well, did they do? They might have done her up, right? To look older, maybe?
I don't know.
Or does Christopher Walken look really young? I feel
is
like he
really
doesn't.
Is rude of me to say? Sorry, Jackie Burroughs, but you're looking old as F in this film.
Oh my God. And she's listening, Henley.
Sorry to you in heaven.
She's not in it for long. Because she does die, and so you mostly see the dad in the movie who also looks old. So maybe in my mind, maybe if I saw another picture of her, I'd be like, oh, no, she does look young. And I'm just thinking about how old the dad looked and, like, aging her comparatively to that. This is me trying to be as gracious as possible.
I think, like, with stuff like Golden Girls, where I think Estelle Getty was the youngest of the four, and she played their mom, I do start mm-hmm. to wonder of like what that did to their psyche of like if they're sitting in their trailer just being like, this sucks. Like,
that would suck. Of course yeah. it would affect you. Of course yeah, yeah. it would. Yeah. Man. All right. Should we watch the trailer?
Yes, please.
We should watch the trailer.
You've been in a coma, Johnny.
For how long?
5 years.
The house is burning. Your daughter's in the house. It's not too late.
You're the talk of the town.
Because I got my head bashed in and I'm still here to talk about it.
Because you have the power of second sight.
I don't know whether it's true or not, these psychic powers of yours. Now I'm at my wit's end, John. I could use your help. It has to do with these murders we've been having. Castle Rock killer. God has seen fit to bless you with this gift. You should use it.
Bless me!
Not only can you see the future,
I can change it.
This looks great.
I will say, that's the original trailer. That is better than any trailer I've seen in the last 20 years.
It's a great trailer.
That is a phenomenal trailer.
I almost wish I had watched that movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
that,
wow.
That looks
here
like
we
a
go.
Way, that looks like a way better movie than what I watched. Here's, that's insane.
Every trailer I've seen in the last 20 years is some like song, and then to the beat of the song, it's like punch, 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 shot, shot, kick, explosion, punch, punch, punch.
Yeah.
That's all every trailer is putting to rhythm action to the song. It's exhausting.
Are you thinking about the Bullet Train trailer? Because that's what comes to mind.
Well, it started with Atomic Blonde, I believe. The
Charlize
Theron movie?
Yeah, but yeah.
Every trailer since then has the exact same thing, which is music with action set to the beat.
Henley, Addle, you both watched this movie. Am I insane? Is that movie that they just described in the trailer
like
a different
movie? Like having an existential crisis about this movie.
That trailer was phenomenal.
They took the plot line that mostly exists at the end of the movie
yeah.
and made it seem like
yes.
it's the only
whole
plot
movie.
Line that exists.
Okay,
the trailer's like the last 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Because I do want to see this movie. This cast. Wow. I loved seeing this cast in this trailer. We'll get there, but it looks like Martin Sheen's playing a bad guy, which like,
oh yeah,
the president of the United
I
States.
I can't wait till we get to the Martin Sheen character. He's honestly.
Did y'all watch The West Wing? Did anybody watch The West Wing?
I did.
I've never seen it.
I watched all of The West Wing.
Oh my God, it's so good. You should watch it. Well, it's like, I think comforting in this moment to be like, wow, look at a good president. But also it's like fucking
it's
probably
upsetting.
Infuriating.
It's really
like,
depressing.
It's basically a fantasy.
It's a 100%
fantasy. But it's
yeah.
great. Martin Sheen is great in it.
He's playing a villain in this to the tune of like Jake Gyllenhaal in Oakjaw, if you saw that. Just
yes.
like anime
coked
level.
Out.
Like, it, like.
Oh, hell what, yeah. I love that
in
for
like
him.
A level one. Yeah. In like a level one acting class, what you imagine the worst student would do as a villain. That's what he's doing here. But somehow.
But it works.
Since it's Martin Sheen, you're like, got it. Oh, I wanted to ask Emily, as a Tom Cruise fan, are you into Tom Skerritt? from Top Gun?
I mean, fucking yes, yeah. Top Gun.
In Top Gun, Tom Skerritt is impossibly handsome.
Oh, he's very handsome in Top Gun.
Yeah. Here he's like a B.
He's possibly handsome.
Yeah.
He's possibly handsome.
We were saying everybody in this movie,
he's
almost everyone in this movie has bright blue eyes. And I think Tom
yeah.
Skerritt and
mm-hmm.
Christopher Walken have these big blue eyes in this movie.
Pools. Mm-hmm. Azure pools,
mm-hmm.
even.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're huge. They're like bugging out of their heads.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic. But
wow.
is that a thing in the 80s where like everyone had blue eyes and blonde hair? You know, they were like pushing a real like blonde hair agenda. I think so.
I think they were.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe one sort of overall kind of handsome, and it was, you know,
mm-hmm.
pretty white.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a big part of what it is it was like, isn't this the physical
white?
Ideal? Don't we
yeah.
like this look?
The coded language of you have movie star looks. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
We get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look, we got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you, because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet, so you get a box of the market's best quality wines however often you'd like for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes, variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
If it works, it works. Okay, should we do it? Should we just jump in?
We should freaking do
it. Yeah, we should.
JPC, Adel, take it away. However you guys want to do it, I'm ready to hear this movie.
Well, I think piggybacking off of like movie star good looks, we start this movie by seeing Christopher Walken teaching in a classroom, and he is wearing the worst wig. I mean,
is it a wig?
Oh my god, is that the one in the trailer with like the little bangs?
Yep.
If it's not a wig,
you're
if it's,
right,
it has to be a wig.
Those little bangs really got me.
Cross my mind. That's how like gullible I am. I'm like, that's just what he looks like.
So he's wearing this wig, and then at some point early on, they time dash like 5 years in the future, and he looks 20 years younger.
Yeah.
Which is because they took the wig off.
The wig is meant to de-age him because the movie starts and then there's a 5-year gap. But so the movie starts, he's teaching in a classroom. He sees his girlfriend, who's also a teacher. They go out after school to a roller coaster that they're on alone. It's just them. And then Chris Walken gets a headache, right, on the roller coaster, which I think is like a precursor to his like, you know, head troubles to come. But the headache like, bothers them. They go out. He doesn't want to stay over at his girlfriend's house. They kiss in the rain. He starts driving back home and gets in a milk truck. Like a
this scene annoyed me so much because a giant a guy carrying what has to be 5 million gallons of milk. Yeah. At midnight on a country road, which is maybe that's how things were done in 83, but this is exhausting.
You gotta get the milk from point A to point B somehow.
It's true, yeah.
Emily, touche. So he's driving this milk truck and something happens where the it's not the caboose. Yeah, I guess the caboose of the semi comes loose. The milk section comes loose. Uh-huh. His front part of the truck dries off into the ditch. And the milk, the caboose turns sideways and just skids for what must be 20 minutes. Now, Christopher Walken, this is almost like, this is almost a one for one for, I think it's Austin Powers 2, when that slow forklift is coming towards the security guard.
Yeah.
The milk truck is coming towards Christopher Walken. He has
ample time.
Endless time.
Endless time to hit the brakes, to swerve, to put the car in reverse, and he just, like, eyes wide, drives straight into it.
Oh,
it is
no.
bonkers.
I will say that I think it could have, the movie could have been edited better in a way that made it seem like the crash was way more inevitable. The way that it was edited seems like he was like, oh, man, a milk truck. What do I do? Well, I'm not going to be able to brake, so...
It was also just so many steps for the accident to happen. Yeah. Like, he could just run into the truck.
Yeah.
Why does this... There's so many different components of the accident.
Is the milk... crucial to the plot in any way, or that's just the kind
I
of
really
truck?
Thought there was going to be. I thought the driver or something was going to be involved in the plot because he
the plot
also
point
like
is a car crash. That's the only plot that point that matters. Okay,
all that matters.
It would be one thing if he hit the milk truck and then it did his body good, and then it's like it had to be milk. No other substance
it had to be milk.
Done.
He needed the calcium.
Yeah,
big milk is starting in 83.
Yeah,
ready to
this
take
is the beginning
charge.
Of the Got Milk campaign.
I think it must have been a milk truck because they were like, well, it can't be a fuel truck. Fuel truck would explode. What's the one thing that it could be in a truck that won't explode? And it's milk. And so,
yeah, sure.
He gets in the big milk accident, and then I think we see his girlfriend visit him in the hospital. He's wearing full bandages. He looks all messed up. And then the next scene, the doctor wakes him up and tells him, and he Christopher Walken, he is truly hamming it up here. At one point, he raises his hands. He does like this weird, like slow motion, like robot, and like touches his face. And he's wondering why he doesn't have any scars or anything. And then the doctor tells him it's been 5 years. He's been in a coma for five
he's
years.
He's doing the thing. If you've ever seen Face Off, the thing that I think it's John, is it Nicolas Cage's character that he does to his daughter?
It's really hard to say, honestly, because Travolta and Cage switched characters.
I think it's Nicolas Cage says the thing to his daughter where it's like a waterfall fingers down her face.
Yeah.
That he does to be like, it's me. That's how you know it's me. Walken does that to himself, and it's very, very weird.
Okay, sure.
And this is the first moment, this happens multiple times and throughout my notes, multiple moments of this, when he finds out, his parents come in.
Yeah.
And
his mom looks old as hell.
She does. She does.
I saw her in the trailer and I was like, well, yeah, she looks old.
And he asks about his girlfriend, whose name is Sarah.
Yeah.
And she says that, you know, she's married to someone else. And then
can I
say her exact phrase is she's turned her back on you. And I was like, what a way to say that.
5 years in a coma.
I'm sorry. I think if your boyfriend is in a coma for 5 years, you're allowed to move on with your life.
You're fine.
I go ahead, Joel, if you're listening and you fucking better be. If I'm going to come in for 5 years, you're allowed to move on.
Four and a half? No, five, yes.
Yeah, once we hit four years, 6 months, time to move on.
He's never going to find someone else who likes cheddar sweets, though.
He's not.
Oh, no.
Good fucking luck, bitch.
Yeah. If I were Joel, I'd just wait. I would just honestly wait.
Wait with cheddar sweets in hand.
There was a satisfying moment that happened, I think, slightly before the crash, maybe, where Walken's character, for some reason, is obsessed with Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes. He's like a teacher. I think he teaches that.
I don't know if that's a bigger plot point in the book, but he's nonstop reciting The Raven.
Man, Stephen King loves to make a, like, English protagonist.
Yeah.
I think he was a English teacher.
I think so.
Before
he
started,
basically, it's all like, well, they're kind of like me.
Yeah, it's like if you've ever read John Irving, every John Irving book, he's like a wrestler in New Hampshire, slept with an older woman.
Sort
and it's
of like the physical ideal. Yeah. And
it's like, we get it, John Irving.
This is when King was making the characters like actually just versions of himself. Later in King's career, he just started putting himself right in the fucking books. So
yeah. what I was going to say, he keeps talking about Edgar Allan Poe, and there's a point where he talks about Sleepy Hollow. And I was like, oh, that's so cool, because Walken eventually played the Headless Horseman. So it's kind of a cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of a neat little thing.
I do like that.
Henley, you were saying the mother in the hospital.
So I wrote down one other quote. Okay, so two things. One, the quote that she says that I wrote down, she cleaves onto another man.
Excuse me?
She just speaks. She's this like religious oriented character with like no other reason for it except that she speaks like she's in an old English play.
I was just like, hey, your son just woke up from a 5 year coma. Maybe like forget about his old girlfriend.
Okay.
Let's move on.
The thing that happens is that he weeps. He puts his hands over his head.
Yeah.
He weeps. And I got to tell you, this movie is a drama. Like people are crying. Like sad things are happening.
Well, that's a lot to take in. You've been in a coma for 5 years. Life as you know it has passed you by. I would be sad.
I did. I sort of extrapolating. I honestly think Sarah left him because he hit specifically a milk truck. I think if it had been
she saw
grain,
the crash happen and was like, why did he fucking break?
If it was just like textiles or grain, you know, if it was anything textiles. Else. But I think if you hear on the news your boyfriend hit a milk truck,
it's humiliating.
Yeah.
No, that's not my boyfriend, actually. No.
That's a great point. I didn't even think about that. That opens up the movie to me in a whole new way.
It was kind of sort of a casual thing.
Did he say boyfriend? Because we're not. No.
The best part is now post-coma, he has regular Christopher Walken hair. He is like no longer hair. Wearing the wig. Thank the Lord.
Oh man. Okay.
Okay. So yeah. So that's the coma. I think he goes pretty immediately. He's living with his parents again. But he also he's learning to walk again because his body's so atrophied.
Right.
That, you see him. I think in the trailer he's got like a cane, so he's like he's learning to walk. There's a very fun scene with an actor who's only in it for a minute. The guy who's teaching him to walk again. Who? What does he say, Adel? He says something like he wants to see him.
Chug along or chug. Yeah. I want to see you chugging.
Yeah,
which I didn't know was a term.
It's a milk joke.
It must be.
Is he making fun of him?
He says, "I'd really like to see you do some serious chugging."
He's totally roasting him for the milk.
I think JPC and I were watching the movie together, and I think I paused it and I said, I never knew.
I will say this. Adel made me write down in my notes what he said. He said, you should be walking, not sitting. And he said, Adel said, make sure you write that down. And I said, okay. And he goes, write it down. And I said, I'll write it down. Well,
for the listeners unnuanced, I meant W-A-L-K-E-N.
What I was going for.
Christopher Walken. Yes.
But I never have in my life heard chugging as like an ambulatory, like a movement term.
No.
Chugging. For like a locomotion, of course.
Of course.
We're also missing a critical thing that I'm sorry, I just breezed right past it. While he's in the hospital, a nurse is helping him and he touches the nurse's hand. And that's the first time he has whatever these like flashes that he gets are. He sees a flash of a little girl in a room that is burning. And then like Christopher Walken is laying in his bed and that room is on fire, which is a really cool practical effect.
Best scene in the movie.
You can see like his torso is under like the bed in a weird way. Like he's not laying in a bed. He's standing in a bed and the room is on fire. It's very cool. But yeah, so he notices, he's like, you got to go home now because your daughter's at home and the house is on fire. And then the nurse runs home and saves the daughter because her house is on fire.
I mean, I love in a movie where someone just believes something like that because it's like, What are the stakes? He's wrong. Okay.
He knows her name. He knows her daughter's name. And she's
Amy.
Like,
her name is Amy. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you imagine? So close your eyes, everyone. Picture you're a nurse. You walk in to check on a patient to be like, how are the vitals? Do you need water? Do you need food? How are you? Yeah. You're just doing your job. You're walking into a room to take vitals. Immediately, a patient grabs your hand and says, your daughter's on fire. Well, like how? What's the math to like...
I don't know, man. I
comprehend what's happening.
I think you gotta
believe him.
You gotta believe him.
Yeah.
No.
I would believe him. Absolutely. I mean, I believe that it was Christopher Walken's real hair in the beginning of the movie. Of course I would believe him.
Sell me anything.
This girl is on fire. Is what my brain was saying.
The next thing is the doctor comes to visit him and he's talking to the doctor and he touches the doctor's hand and he has a vision, which is where the man got his groin burnt with the squab of World War II. It's a battle. His doctor is a little boy and he's getting separated from his mom. And we see that scene. And then we see it goes back to the present. And Christopher Walken's like, your mom's still alive. I know where she is. I know like her address.
Yeah, he knows everything about her.
So my question was, I don't think they ever really explained it because it wasn't part of the vision. Like, how did he know where she was and her address and her name and all that stuff?
That's the magic of this movie is they do not explain one thing about this power that he has. We don't get any rules. We don't get any reasoning.
Sometimes maybe it's just like if the people have something that needs to be shown, he gets to see it.
I think that's it.
Yeah, it's very strange.
The one that was in, I think they were speaking Polish. The one that was in Poland, presumably Poland. Walken wasn't there, right? Because in the other ones, he's there. I think in that one, he was not present.
I don't think so. Yeah,
he wasn't.
I couldn't remember. Okay.
I sort of like when a movie's like, just don't worry about it.
This is where you really don't have to worry about it, but you do get at this point, oh, he has this like gift of whatever. Like, it's not even just premonition, because this is like he gets to see back in time in this one. So it's the rules for his power are very, I guess, ambiguous. But the rule is he has the power and he is going to be using it.
Great. Love it.
And there's another emotional scene where the doctor calls the number that he's given or whatever. And his mom comes to the phone, but he can't speak because he's too moved. And then he tells Christopher Walken it just wasn't meant. It wasn't meant to be. And then they weep. And I was weeping.
Oh my god.
I was like, this is not a horror movie, but I love it.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was a little, I think maybe it was a little scary when the room was on fire and the girl was on fire and she was like screaming. That was like, oh, that's like shocking. But the second vision was just like, it was sad. Like, it was just very sad. Yeah.
Just sad.
Damn.
Okay, so I think then the next scene is Christopher Walken goes to see his ex-girlfriend, finds out that she is remarried, finds out, I think his parents say that she's remarried, but she tells him she's remarried and she has a kid. And she's like, Johnny, it's been 5 years. And he has a line that's like, not for me. Like, he has a really devastating line that's like,
I think he says, for me, I went to bed and woke up and you were like, no time had passed, you know?
Oh, I mean, this is one of those circumstances where it's like, and both of you are right.
Yeah.
And that's, life is the gray area.
I just caught myself. I do want to apologize that I said being in a coma is just going to bed. That's not, I didn't mean to.
That is not, Adel is not a medical doctor.
I didn't mean to be reductive to those in comas.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
Along those lines, yes. My apologies.
That's his experience of the thing. Yeah.
So, she's like, it's sad and, you know, I miss you, but I've got this husband now and whatever.
That's heartbreaking.
There's... The cuts also in this movie, it's like very 1983, where the cuts are hard, sharp, and like abrupt, and you're just in the next scene. It was, the movie that I watched before this was like a brand new, like 2022 movie. It was that that one.
Gray Man?
The Gray Man on Netflix, like an action movie. It was okay. It was good. It was like...
That's sort of what it seems like it's sort of like, it's fine.
It's exactly what you think it's going to be. It's just going to be like a bang, bang action movie. But the dichotomy between these two movie experiences with these like very like level like scenes, very long like pacing, very abrupt cuts. It was just like movie making has come a long way.
Yeah.
It's almost like Bourne Identity cuts, but instead of being the same fight, it's a totally different scene.
Yeah.
And way slower. Slow it down.
Talking.
And it's we've talked about this before, Emily, the like 1980s acting and the accents that everyone has. There's some kind of like leftover old Hollywood movie accent that everyone still is kind of using. Mm-hmm.
That is the transit. I think it's called transatlantic accent. Mm-hmm. That is my favorite. The old like, hey there, you. What are you doing here? Like, how dare you come? What was the line the mom says? She
cleaved onto another man.
Oh. Yeah,
that was a little bit of Dracula the way that you just did that.
She cleaved onto another man.
Whenever I do an accent, it always becomes like Transylvania.
Yeah,
they do a scene to. I think it's one of the next scenes. And if I'm getting this wrong, I realized as I was watching this movie that I'd have to be recapping it. I'm like, oh, this is not my strength.
It's hard, but this is going great for me so far. Also, I literally don't. I'm just hearing a story. I couldn't fact check you. I'm just like, tell me a thing I don't know about.
There's a scene where the doctor calls a press conference to like tell people about Christopher Walken's gift. And there is a reporter in the front row leaning back in his chair with a leather jacket on, just a total asshole. And he's like, I'm from this journalistic. He doesn't have a notebook. He doesn't have a recorder. He has nothing on him, just a leather jacket and a bad attitude. But he doesn't believe Christopher Walken. And Christopher Walken's like, why should I prove myself to you? And he touches the reporter's hand. And then Christopher Walken starts like learning about like this reporter's sister who killed himself. And the reporter's like gets... You know, he's getting spooked out because Christopher Walken shouldn't know this stuff. And he does believe him. But it is a very weird scene. But one of the things, it's a little foreshadowing to later in the movie. The reporter asks him to read the future about the governor's like election or something. Or I think it's the Senate election or something. That's coming up. And Christopher Walken's like, I don't know. I don't even know who's running. And I'm like, it's such a weird thing to ask someone who's been in a coma for 5 years about a Senate election. Because... after 5 years, there's no way, like, there's no way he could know anything about that Senate
election. And that's if he was, like, really paying attention before he went into the coma. We don't know what he... Also, can he tell the future? I guess we're going to get there.
We don't know what the gift does, and neither does the reporter at that
end. It's absolutely buck wild. So he wakes up from a coma. He says to the nurse, get home, your daughter's on fire. She was.
So that's like the present. Him seeing the present.
Yes.
Yeah, so he saw that happening. It was all real. And so he becomes this, like, known entity. They hold a press conference. And I love that after that, the guy's like, prove it. And it's like, it's like if someone caught a kid jumping out of a building and they're like, prove that you're a hero. And it's like, well, I was just a hero.
I just did the thing.
And then when he does prove it, he touches the guy. And like JPC said, like, he sees what happened to this guy's sister. The guy yanks his hand away and he's like, get off me, freak. And like storms out. And it's like, he just proved it. Like, what are you? Unbelievable.
I also love that. You know what's coming. You know what's going to happen. But it's so deeply satisfying to have the character who doesn't believe. And you get to show them that it's real.
That's what we all wish we could do.
Don't you? Don't you?
So that press conference happens. It's being televised live. Christopher Walken's old ass mom is watching it. And she's very religious.
Decrepit.
She's very religious. And she gets so upset that he has this power. She has a heart attack or a stroke or something.
Oh, God.
And he goes to visit her in the hospital, but she doesn't know where she is, and she's, like, dead the next scene. So she dies pretty immediately.
Oh, jeez.
The face she makes when she has a stroke or heart attack is chilling.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So she dies. The dad is all alone. Christopher Walken goes and moves back in with the dad. We get another thing. This is maybe my favorite scene in the entire movie, because Adele and I both cued in onto this pretty quickly. The scene opens at the dad's house. Prominent in this frame is the shittiest Christmas tree. It's the worst tinsel job on a Christmas tree that you've ever seen. It is explained later on in a subsequent scene that the reason it's so bad is because the mom died and she was the one who did that. So it's like bad on purpose. But I was like, please let them talk about this, because if it's just a set piece, whoever was decorating the set.
Bad, yeah.
Someone totally forgot there was supposed to be a Christmas tree in that set.
Yeah, that's the joke we made.
No, I'm ready. I'm ready. I got the tree.
They're like, what time of year is this set? Oh, no. Ready in five. Ready in five.
Yeah. No, you told me to get the tree. I got the tree. The tree's ready to go.
This is the scene where it's the introduction of Sheriff Tom Skerritt, whose name I don't know, but he's played by Tom Skerritt.
We can call him Tom Skerritt. Yeah, that works.
Sheriff Blue Eyes. And he comes to the house asking for Christopher Walken's help catching the, I want to say Bar Harbor Butcher, but that's Dexter. So it's not that.
I think it's just Castle Rock Killer.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Henry, do you have the sheriff's name? Was it Drod or Drood, or was that the?
No, Dodd is the other deputy.
Sorry. I do Sheriff Bannerman.
Bannerman. That's right.
Bannerman.
Okay. Yeah. So Bannerman asks Christopher Walken, whose name in this is Johnny Smith, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very, very just like.
Tragically bad name.
That fake was one name. Of the fun facts too, was that there's a lot of talk about how his name seemed fake, but no one changed it. Everyone, like Stephen King, was like, it seems fake, and David Cronenberg was like, that's a fake name, but they were like, let's just leave it in.
There was one point in the movie too where he's like trying to be anonymous, and I'm like, well, you can't pick a more anonymous name. Like, your name is already Johnny Smith, so it's like you can't go by anything else. Like,
I think he just starts going by John, and he's like, no one will know.
Yeah.
Also, Stephen King being like, sounds like a fake name. You wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You wrote it.
He's such an asshole.
It's your fault.
So the sheriff comes to his house. He wants help catching the Castle Rock killer. He doesn't know how Christopher Walken's gift works, so he figures he could help him with it. And Christopher Walken says no, and he just wants to, like, move on with his life, and he's not going to help. And then he does end up helping, and I don't really remember. Was there something that happened in between
them? They're watching the news, and they say, like, another 15-year-old woman was murdered.
Oh, no.
It's a 15-year-old girl, and there's, I mean, trigger warning for some... On the news, they say it's, like, a rape murder. Mm-hmm. And so Christopher Walken sees that, and he's like, oh, I think I'm going to have to help
maybe I'll
stop
try.
This guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens in between those two moments is that his girlfriend, Sarah... comes to visit him with her son.
This is a wild scene.
And they just have sex. Yeah. Like, she's she puts her son down to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing. You can't do that.
In his bed without asking. And then she puts the kid to bed in his bed. And then there's a moment where she starts unbuttoning her sweater and she goes, some things are worth waiting for. And he goes, like, what? And she's like, sex. They have sex. They have a little dinner.
She makes dinner.
And she like goes, she walks to the car, gets dressed, walks to the car. And then she's like, well, that's never going to happen again. And it's like, you just let him on. Like, what are you doing?
And she showed up unannounced. He was like, what is she doing here? Whoa. The house is a mess. So she showed up with her kid unannounced, had sex with her ex-boyfriend. And then it was just like, goodbye forever.
And she's still married. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's still married.
Well, that's also just very... very selfish. What does he want that? Does he need that?
They're all on such good terms. Christopher Walken is not upset. Yeah. He's completely understanding. He's like happy that they got to have sex in a beautiful little family dinner with his dad. She cooks them dinner.
Yeah.
She's wearing a goddamn apron. I'm like, who is this woman?
I do think there's a world where like, yeah, maybe that was necessary closure for them, but I do feel like they probably should have discussed it.
We were watching with Adel's wife, and she, during that scene, she goes, this is terrible for his recovery.
I'm thinking like, for him, this is pretty bad.
Yeah, because that's what he wants. Not great.
And he gets it, and then she's like, "Well, never again."
Bye.
And he's like,
what? It's why I mean, like, if everybody has discussed it and we're on the same page, and maybe all of us have been to therapy about like what do we need to process this traumatic event. No, okay.
And it wasn't even like let's have sex, but it can be it's one time only. It's let's have sex, let's have dinner like a family, and then bye forever. It's weird. Mm-hmm.
That was a real like knife in there. The family dinner really hurt me.
And the dad, seemingly 5 feet away, the dad grabs a high chair and he's like, this is what Christopher Walken sat in when he was 6 months old.
No.
You had this 40-year-old high chair?
The dad says, he gets the high chair from the basement and says, I made this on the day he was born.
Yeah. Way to help your wife.
Which is, first of all.
Oh my God.
I don't know much about kids. I know that one-day-old babies do not need a high chair.
Definitely not.
No, you're not putting him in a high chair.
His poor wife, that is why she looks so old, is because whole existence, she was on her own.
I don't need you to be building things right now.
Stop building a chair.
Please stop building this. You're going to build it all in one day?
Can you come to the hospital?
Meet your son.
My father built me a chair the day I was born, and I'll build my son a chair, and I'll save it forever.
He cleaved to that chair.
Oh my God.
Boy. Okay. So, all right. Sweet. Now he's like, I'm going to help solve this murder because I'm having a weird time.
He said, yeah, he's going to help solve the murder. He goes to the sheriff. They go to one of the crime scenes. There's a recent crime scene. And Christopher Walken tries to like touch a cigarette package that was like evidence at the crime scene to see if he can get anything from it. He doesn't. So a weird scene.
Okay.
Also, at that moment, the sheriff and the deputy get a call that there's been another murder, and this is like 10. This is like 11 murders in 3 years. They rush over to that murder. Christopher Walken touches the body of the woman who's been murdered, and he does get a flashback.
Oh, shit.
And this is the big one. This is the gazebo one. This is $2.2 million of the budget for the big gazebo.
Incredible. It looks lovely.
It is a big, it's a huge gazebo. This is not like a backyard gazebo.
This town square gazebo.
A town square gazebo. This is a Gilmore Girls gazebo.
a famous gazebo in my brain.
And in the vision, Christopher Walken can like see the killer from behind. He sees the woman who's about to be killed. He's there. But he like can't affect anything because it's, you know, it's a vision. And then he sees who the killer was and he comes back to reality and he's like, I saw his face and I couldn't do anything. I did nothing. I just stood there and did nothing while, you know, this person got killed. There's also this is the only part of the movie. There's like gratuitous nudity here.
There is, in
a very like upsetting way, too.
Yeah, that was completely unnecessary. Yeah. That's another like classic 80s thing where it's like, let's just, you know, we should at least show a little bit of the rape. Let's show a little bit of it. Come on.
The 80s had to have boobs in there. They're like, no one's going to come and see a movie if there's not boobs in there. And it's like, I don't know. This isn't like fun way that people like seeing boobs. This is like a violent attack. Like, this isn't good.
I kept waiting for this movie to get like really extremely fucked up. I was like, at some point this movie takes a turn and something really upsetting happens. And I was kind of in my head, I was like, oh, he's been somehow raping and murdering people while he's been in a coma.
That's a twist.
Because the milk had gone rancid.
But that's clearly not what happened. So
okay.
We find out who the killer is.
We find out the killer is, and it's the other sheriff, Dodd, Sheriff Dodd, who, or the deputy who is there. There's only like two cops, and it's the other cop. And it's a very funny reveal, in my opinion, because the sheriff is looking straight ahead and he's going, Dodd, like, Dodd, get over here. But he's not turning around to look at where the, like, 1 foot behind him where the other sheriff is. And he's like, Dodd, where are you? And then another guy goes, hey, sheriff, he just left. He just took your car and left.
Card, right?
And at no point does Tom Skerritt ever turn around to, like, look at this guy.
You don't notice your car is leaving the premises.
Or the one other cop that's keeping all the reporters back anyway. So
wow, okay.
Well, if he would have turned around, he would have been looking at the Dodson. The Dodson.
They run over to Dodd's house, just the sheriff and Christopher Walken. The sheriff tells Christopher Walken, stay here, don't come in. Christopher Walken doesn't. He follows him in. But they, like, knock on the door. Christopher Walken sees Dodd naked, like, in the house upstairs.
It's a very, maybe an homage to Psycho?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Ish. Because he's living with his mother and there's a whole thing with the mom, yeah.
His mom, they ask his mom, they're like, can we come in? And his mom's like, he's not here. And it's like, his car's here. And he's like, yeah, but he's not here. And Christopher Walken's like, I saw them. He's like, right. He's so like I'm looking out the window at me naked. And the mom's like, okay, fine. Like, yeah, I guess you can come in. And then at one point, Christopher Walken touches the mom's hand.
They barge in. They like knock her down. And she tries to grab onto them and they like push her away.
And he grabs her hand and gets like a vision that we don't see. And he says, you knew. And then the woman's like, you're the devil, which is a weird thing to say when it's like,
well, your son is a murderer. Yeah. So.
And you knew about it. So it's like, how am I the devil for like calling you out on it? It's like a
interesting moral code.
Yeah, exactly. And the mom seems pretty rattled by everything as well. And then this is, I don't want to talk about this. Someone else could talk about this.
This is the scariest part of the whole film.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-day blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no-charge, no-obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/too scary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
If there's any part that is horror, it's this moment.
It's this, yeah.
Okay, I'm ready.
Would you, Henley, do you want to describe it? Do you want me to? God,
no, please, you okay. Do the
Somebody
honors.
Somebody has to.
So Dodd is upstairs in the upstairs bathroom. He realizes that he's about to be arrested and charged as the Castle Rock killer. So he's naked. He puts on a leather, I want to say like a overcoat, like a trench
really
coat.
Really intense leather trench coat. Yeah.
Yeah. So he puts it on. He's staring at himself in the bathroom mirror. He takes out a pair of shears.
Oh, no.
Very sharp scissors.
No.
Which is what he's been
killing
uses,
women with. And he places them on the sink in such a way that they're like pointed outward and they're slightly open.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And like stable, like they're holding, they're stable. And he opens his mouth. As wide as possible, and this is the worst
part.
This is the wildest part. Takes both of his hands, grabs the back of his head, and it's almost as if his head and his hands are two different, controlled by two different entities. Like he puts his hands on the back of his head of like, if my head gets cowardly, my hands will finish the job. Like, just in case my head chickens out, my hands are here to make sure it gets done.
No.
And he takes his head, and you think he's going to...
I thought he was going to slam.
You think he's going to slam his head as hard as possible. He takes his hands behind his head, and he, as slow as possible, like an 80-year-old grandpa getting out of a pool... That speed, he pushes his mouth into the scissors.
I fast forwarded through this part. I have to be honest.
It could not have been more awful to watch.
They don't show anything. They show him like him getting his like mouth on the scissors, and then it cuts away, and then they come into the bathroom, and he's dead, obviously. But it's like, first of all, I don't think that would work.
That would work. That like, wouldn't work.
I in my wildest, you know, if I had to do it, how would I do it? It's like that is. You can't do it that way. That's painful. It's so painful. Mouth, it wouldn't work.
I will say, famously, the mouth has the most negative space. So if you open your mouth.
Famously.
If you open your mouth and shove scissors in it, there's room for them to go in there.
Yeah.
So it was a weird. I don't know. It's all weird.
Oh, no. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I did. I fast forwarded through this. I thought I watched it.
I don't like
but
that.
Hearing
one
you
bit.
Describe it, I was like, oh, no, I just fast forwarded.
They find Dodd dead. The mom then takes Dodd's gun, which he had, so he could have used the gun. So I don't know why he did the scissors. And she tries to shoot Christopher Walken. I think she does, but it...
Yeah, she does.
It doesn't ever come up that he's been winged. Like, it doesn't... He doesn't spend any time, like, recovering from the bullet. Anyway, she shoots Christopher Walken, like, in the side or it grazes him or something. And then Tom Skerritt pops out and shoots her. And you get the squib explosion. And she goes, oh! And she's dead as well.
Okay.
And we're about halfway through the movie... And it's kind of like a hard reset point.
It's okay. So when I was reading about this movie, one way that it was described is it's like three separate narratives. Like there's three different vignettes. And that's really a good way to think about it because it is like him getting in the accident, his relationship with this woman, coming out of a coma. Then it's him like going after the Castle Rock killer. And then now we're entering the third kind
of
moment.
Okay, we're entering our final act, which was basically the whole trailer.
Yeah, I guess so. Because the trailer kind of made it seem like...
I haven't heard about Martin Sheen yet.
Well, the trailer kind of made it seem like Martin Sheen could have been the Castle Rock killer.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, which he's not.
He's not.
Okay. And by the way, the Castle Rock killer part, the whole part is like 15 minutes. It's like he goes to one crime scene, he goes to the other crime scene, he solves the case. It's like that is... It's almost a waste of my time to hear about that.
Yeah, it doesn't connect to anything else.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't. And they leave it all behind. But now we do a reset point. He's now John. He goes and moves to a different town to get away
different
from
town
all of
and
it.
A mansion. And his mansion, this works out for the movie, famously. His mansion is situated exactly across the street from a giant, like, town square park where every single campaign rally is held.
Yeah.
Great. Great. And all the
there's billboards being built. That only face his house. They don't face the street. They don't face the park.
Well, sure. They got to get the money.
They face only his house, which is insane.
Yeah. The Senate campaign that the reporter asked him about earlier. Now we see a campaign for Senate thing in front of his house, like a billboard in front of his house. And it's and he's a tutor. He's like tutoring people at home in his house. He's separating himself from the world. He's not going out. The doctor at one point comes to him and is like, you got to come with me. Like these episodes are killing you. Like I can look at you, Christopher Walken, and see your strength draining away. And like, you have to isolate yourself and I can help you. And he's like, I am isolating myself. I'm in my house. I don't see anybody. I don't touch anybody. And I have all this mail from people begging me for help, but there's no help that I can give them because it's, he says at one point that it feels like dying, like he's dying every time he uses his gift. So yeah, it's bad. And his like headaches are getting worse. But
I read just very quickly to interject,
please.
I was so confused why this was called the Dead Zone. So I actually looked it up and I don't. And Henley, you might have better information than me. But what I found was basically in the book,
they say that, I don't know if the numbers are right, but they say that humans only use 10% of their brain, and that 90% of it is just this dead zone where nothing's being used or happening. And Christopher Walken's character, when he had the coma and got hit by milk, he kind of connected, there's connective tissue and connective routes that he accessed more of his brain, thus illuminating the dead zone that most people have.
Very interesting. Okay.
So much of culture has been poisoned by that fake statistic that we only use 10% of our brains, which was like extrapolated from some other quote about how like brain functioning works. But it's like, it's very wrong that we only use 10% of our brains. So
yeah.
every idea that's ever like spawned off of that is just like, oh,
you
Jesus
mean like
Christ.
The best movie that's ever been made, Limitless?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, give me that pill.
Adderall can solve everything, you guys. It makes us access the rest of the 90%.
I mean,
another man, like a very rich man from town, comes to see him and says that he wants him to tutor his kid, but he can't tutor the kid here at his house. He has to go because his kid's like a shut-in or something, a recluse. So he has to go and tutor the kid at this rich guy's house.
You want to know how rich this kid is? They show his room. He has three desks.
Yeah, so
he literally
funny.
Has three desks.
He has three desks and a table in his bedroom.
That's absolutely too many surfaces.
Yeah. But also, Christopher Walken, when the guy shows up at his house, he casually shakes the guy's hand. And I'm like, wouldn't you be way more careful
people.
With the hand thing?
That happens a few times throughout the movie. And I was like really bothered by it. I was like, just don't do this. Why are you doing this?
It's like Rogue going through a crowd high-fiving everyone. It's like, Rogue, your whole power is touch.
It felt like whoever was editing the movie was like, well, I have no shots of him not shaking this guy's hand. I can't lose this from the movie. Like, did no one on set be like, whoa, doesn't he have a power? No. It was almost as if the power was an afterthought in the movie.
Ay-yay.
Very odd. He goes to the boy's house. He meets the boy. The boy has a very deep voice. It was shocking. It was shocking to hear.
The boy's also just a normal boy.
It's
like,
normal.
He's just, I thought this is where the movie was going to get weird, but it's just a normal boy.
He's nine or so. He has very cherub-esque features, and they show him on his desk, and he's like, yeah, I got this report, dude. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, but the dad is like, this boy's got all these problems, and you meet the kid, and he's just like normal. He just doesn't want to go outside. And it's like, okay, like, that's fine. Like, it's
got
what
all
we
desks
all
he needs
are
right
now.
Here.
Yeah, like, it's
How
totally
is a desk
fun.
Like a raven, Edgar Allan Poe?
But when he goes to the dad's house, the dad is a very rich man. Who else is there? But Martin Sheen and his goon, and Martin Sheen is running for Senate, and he's like trying to get this rich man's support.
Mm-hmm.
And so that introduces us to the Martin Sheen Senate other. This is Act Three, I guess, of the film. And Martin Sheen, I don't remember what he was saying because I think Adel and I were like talking about something else during the scene. But I think
he
Martin
looks
Sheen
so much like Emilio Estevez.
He does. Yeah, oh,
he
that's what we were talking about.
So much like it.
We were talking about what he looked like. But I think in this scene, he's saying it sounded like he was saying some like racist shit about the ghetto and about like giving people in the ghetto money to vote for him. And I was like, I didn't really want to rewind it because I was like, I don't need to hear what he said. But I was
interesting.
Like,
interesting. We're just trying to be like, he's bad.
I think they were trying to get off that he's a bad guy from the start, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
He also says, and you may not catch it unless we had the subtitles on because the sound mixing is pretty rough. Mm. You may not catch it unless you have the subtitles on. There's a moment where it's showing him in a park speaking and then Walken and his doctor maybe are talking. But then on the subtitles, you see Martin Sheen say, old people are buying dog food to eat because they're poor. And it's just such a weird little moment. Yeah.
Him and his
a weird specific.
The rich man are watching after the tutoring session just goes gangbusters. They're watching TV and they're watching Martin Sheen at a rally. And Christopher Walken's like, oh, yeah, you're going to vote for that guy. And he's like, I'm not going to vote for that guy. That guy sucks. But since I'm rich, I have to support every political candidate, which is how it works, because no matter who wins, I can't look like too far away from them or too close to them. So he's just explaining how rich people
vote.
It is
to be a rich person. Yeah.
Yeah. But the campaign rally is wild because Martin Sheen's whole rally, like he's supposed to be a third party candidate and like this populist candidate. But the rally, the speech that he's giving is unreal because he's like, everybody here doesn't have jobs and you're all a bunch of losers. And here's what my plan is. Work for my campaign for free. And that's going to be good for you. And I'm like, why do people like this?
You gloss over the point that when they turn on the TV, he's at the campaign
yes!
rally and they turn on the TV and he goes 99 100. I just did 100 push-ups. And I turned to JBC and I'm like, you're telling me
no.
a news station filmed an old man doing 100 push-ups? That's 6 minutes of dead
he
air.
He began his rally by just getting on stage and doing 100 push-ups?
100 push-ups. And everyone cheered. And then he laid into them and berated them like an angry stepfather. Here's it was thing. Insane.
That's like something the fucking Trump would do. If he physically
could. But he would kill him. It would kill
just
him.
Just being like, okay, yeah, I could do 100 push-ups. It's like, nobody's asking you to. That means nothing to me. I don't fucking care.
I could do a backflip.
If you are listening to this, okay, dear listener, and you can do 100 push-ups, congratulations to you, because in the best shape that I've ever been in my life, when I was actively trying, I was like, I want to make a goal for myself to be able to do 100 push-ups. And this is my 20s. I was unable to do it no matter how fucking hard I tried. And I tried the most push-ups I've ever been able to do was like 70. And I was dead, like spaghetti arms, dead to the world.
I can't even fathom 100 push-ups.
It's better to imagine then that he didn't. He just caught up there, did 99, 100.
99, 100. Sorry, you guys. I did the other 98 backstage.
Yeah.
That's honest. Can I just say, Henley, honestly, that is a phenomenal bit. I'm going to start doing that is like come out and be like 99, 100, 100. Like, that's a phenomenal bit.
But what I don't understand is why anyone liked Martin Sheen's character, because nothing he was saying sounded compelling. Everyone who was watching live was like, that guy didn't do 100 push-ups. What the fuck is he talking about? Like, I don't know. He's geared as this like very popular populist guy who everyone should like, but none of his message was straight resonating with me at all.
I mean, he's very charming. Maybe we're just going off of that.
Yeah. He is not charming though. He's so coked out the whole time. He's just like so insane. But people love him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that night, however, we really get to know for sure that he's not a good guy, because he goes to the local paper's office in the middle of the night. This is a little confusing they're like staking out the local paper, trying to like nab this editorialist who also just happens to go to the office in the middle of the night. Was there a reason?
Nope. Yeah, it's so weird. And it's this is the funniest movie. The funniest moment in the whole movie, and maybe the funniest moment in any movie, because they're basically like, we know you're going to run this smear campaign. You're going to run not smear campaign. You're going to run this article about me that's going to make me lose the election. So he goes, if you run that article, we will show we're going to print pictures of you cheating on your wife. And they make a whole meal. There's 2 minutes of Martin Sheen's goon being like, here's the pictures. Is it this one? They show a picture of his wife and they're like, well, that's your wife, so this must be not your wife. And they keep, it's literally 2 minutes. And then, the guy goes, well, I still might run the thing. And they go, well, then we'll kill you. And it's like, that's not how blackmail works.
No.
You buried the lead.
You don't need the one blackmail. Kill you blackmail's off. If the kill you's on the table, that's all you need.
Just start with that.
Yeah. I mean, we'd rather not, but if we must, we'll kill you.
But it was 2 minutes of unnecessary hemming and hawing about him cheating on his wife.
This is also when Martin Sheen has a line where he says, I have a vision that I'm going to be president of the United States someday and nobody is going to stop me. And I was like, yeah, you're going to be Jed Bartlett. And it's crazy you're saying this now. It's really weird.
Said that too.
It's like your most iconic role is the president of the United States.
Absolutely.
This movie about visions predicted a vision about Christopher Walken and Martin Sheen.
It's weird.
Whoa.
Sleepy Hollow and West Wing.
That's what's spooky.
It's truly wild, because he couldn't be less Jeb Bartlett in this. He's just like this insane person.
Love it.
After this scene, which is also like a weird scene because it's like one of the only scenes in the movie where like Christopher Walken isn't like involved at all. We're just like seeing this slice of life where he's like threatening people, and he's basically just, you know, we now know that he's like a pretty bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Is this what leads Christopher? What leads Christopher Walken to go to his rally?
So a couple things happen between this. There's this whole plot line. So basically, one day while he's tutoring Chris, someone comes to his house, knocks on the door. It's the husband of his girlfriend canvassing for Martin Sheen. Mm-hmm. So he has a confrontation with his ex-girlfriend, her new husband. She's there too. She's a huge Martin Sheen fan. She loves him. And after he has this exchange, it's very draining on him. He closes the door. He weeps. Another weeping moment. He weeps.
I think him and the kid hug.
Yeah. So then he hugs the kid. But tough. I think it's almost like they have to give like enough reasoning for him to, because the whole point is that he touches the kid.
Yeah.
And he has a vision of Chris in ice hockey uniform falling through an ice lake, drowning with his whole team.
Oh, my God.
All the kids falling into the water and sinking to the bottom of this lake.
Oh, no.
So Christopher Walken goes to the dad's house and he sees this van full of hockey equipment. And the dad's like, yeah, I bought a bunch of hockey equipment. We're all going to go play hockey on this lake. And Christopher Walken's like, no, you got to not do that. And he follows him into the house and he has like the most Christopher Walken as we would know him moment in the whole movie, where like the dad's not ignoring him. He's going to do it anyway. And Christopher Walken like screams and uses his cane to like break a table and a plate.
Oh, is that in the trailer where he's wearing that crazy
he looks like Dracula
jacket
with the collar?
Yeah. I was like, that jacket kind of rules.
Yeah, it's cool.
But it's like, if the movie's an hour 40, this is like an hour 25 in. He smashes the vase and the table with his cane and he goes, don't go on the ice. And it's like, truly, it's like the birthing moment of Chris Walken as we know him.
Yes.
And for the next few moments, he has that cadence and then he kind of tempers
it
down.
Don't go on the ice.
Yeah. And then it's gone. And then you're like,
a little bit.
That must be the moment he was on set and he goes, this sounds pretty good.
This is kind of fun.
I might lean into
like
this.
That.
Yeah. It's funny. He has a big freak out moment. And then the dad's like, whoa, okay, I won't do it. And he's like, I'm sorry. I don't want you to think I'm weird or anything. Like, I apologize.
he really
tries to walk it back.
And then he has a moment where the dad like turns around and the kid is there and he's like, hey, I'm not a weird guy. And the kid's like, okay, like that's fine. And the dad's just like letting him like say goodbye to the kid with his back towards him. It's very strange.
Interesting.
But that's he gets fired after that. He's not going to be this kid's tutor anymore.
Sure.
And Walken bounces out of there. And then the kid's like, okay, I guess, you know, bullet dodge there. And the dad's like, no, I was just saying that to get rid of him. We're still going on the ice. And the kid's like, no. And the dad's like, fine, I'll go with your friends. And then the next day in the paper, two kids die on the ice and it's not the little boy. And Christopher Walken like calls the dad and the dad is just like, he's like pretty inconsolable. He's just like completely not moving.
Comatose. He'll never be the same again. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, someone told him if you go do this, kids are going to die. And he did it anyway. And then kids died. That's hard to come back from.
And it's weird because the dad at one point says that he looked up Christopher Walken and he knows that Christopher Walken has this gift. And he's like, but I didn't hire you for that. I hired you to be a teacher. And I'm like, yeah, but you still know he can tell the future. So why did you flip such a fucking fit when he told the future? Like,
can you believe this psychic freak says we're going to die? This guy who was right about everything says we're going to. But I don't know. Sorry if this was mentioned. Forgive me. Christopher Walken will not leave the house until he touches the. That sounds bad. Until he like has in contact with the kid and he can see the kid is going to be safe. And then Walken leaves the house. But he doesn't leave until then.
I know. I also missed one of my favorite lines of the movie, which is the dad. Christopher Walken is like scaring the kid because he broke the table. And the dad goes, don't be scared. Just go eat your cookies. It's a great line.
He's a good at parenting. Speaking of good parenting.
Yeah.
And so then that kind of like ends that there's so many little vignettes in here and then this is when we get to the rally, which is so conveniently happening truly right outside of Christopher Walken's window. He just can glance out his window. He sees his ex-girlfriend getting out of her car with her son like there at the rally.
He decides to head over there. He decides to shake Martin Sheen's hand at one point. And when he shakes someone's hands, he really gets in there and he does not let go. And he sees this vision of Martin Sheen as the president waking up in the middle of the night, forcing a general to like arm a nuclear weapon because he had a vision that this was what needed to happen. And then he's just launching nukes. And then he invites everyone else and like the other members of the cabinet. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're at war. Congratulations. It's wild.
And so, he launches nuclear missiles.
So he sees this vision and he's like, I got to stop this. I got to do something about this. He has a meeting with his doctor. The doctor comes to visit him and he asked the doctor this question, like, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler? And the doctor's like, I'm a man of medicine. I would absolutely murk that motherfucker. I would shoot that Hitler guy. No problem. And Christopher Walken's like, OK, cool. Well, they draw it out a little more than that. But the doctor does end up saying that he would kill Hitler. And so Christopher Walken gets it in his head that he has to shoot Martin Sheen.
Huge leap.
Yeah. Well, he can tell the future. Okay. He knows it's going to be like World War III if he doesn't do this.
Right. Sure. Okay. Well.
So So then, yeah, he gets his dad's gun. He goes to where Martin Sheen's going to be having a big rally, and he breaks in and he hides upstairs in like the balcony of this rally.
Wow.
And then the next day, Martin Sheen comes in, big ass crowd comes in. Christopher Walken's ex-girlfriend and the baby come in as well. And they're sitting on stage, like she's like high up in the campaign, sitting on stage with Martin Sheen. And then I guess this is like the end of the movie. Christopher Walken, who he's on the balcony. He pops up like a jack in the box. Like he had
a perfect vantage point to just like lay the on the precipice of the balcony, lay the rifle, aim, take his time.
Nope.
He pops up and like announces himself to where everyone turns and looks at him, and then he freaks out.
He's like doing a puppet show up there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He takes a shot. I believe he misses with the first shot.
Yeah, he hits the podium, maybe.
Yeah. And then Martin Sheen grabs the baby and holds the baby in front of his face to like avoid the next bullet. And then Martin Sheen's goon shoots Christopher Walken, and Christopher Walken gets shot in the chest, falls off the balcony, breaks a pew.
Clearly going to die.
Someone took a bunch of pictures of Martin Sheen with the baby in front of him. Everybody clears out. Martin Sheen like goes over to him and is like, who sent you? Who are you, son of a bitch? And Christopher Walken touches his hand and realizes, even though he's dying, that Martin Sheen's finished. And then he has a vision of Martin Sheen, like there's like a Newsweek with a picture of him with a baby shield.
Yeah, using a baby to block bullets. Yeah. It's like, he ain't gonna be president.
Yeah. And he's like in a dark room and he's got a loaded gun. He like shoots himself and Christopher Walken's like, I did it. I stopped the future. Like you're finished. And that's the resolution. And then the girlfriend comes over and she's like, why'd you do it, Johnny? Like, why? And he's like, I don't know. Like, it's too hard to explain.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. I don't really have much time.
Yeah.
And then she tells him she loves him and they weep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he dies.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Wow.
And that's the end of the movie.
That's the end of the movie.
And if I may, if I may threaten your listeners.
Okay.
If you don't, you either watch this movie or I will release a secret about you. And if you don't watch the movie, I'll kill you. That's how blackmail works, right?
That's blackmail.
Yeah. I got a series of things that I'm willing to do.
That's how you become president.
And the last one is kill you.
You got to be willing to make these kinds of moves.
God,
yeah.
That's honestly him grabbing a baby to prevent himself from getting shot.
I did not either, but it made perfect sense because that would ruin a political campaign.
It's so funny to be like, well, you can't shoot me. I'm holding a baby.
I am dying. Maybe after this recording, I'm going to go on Etsy because I'm dying for a t-shirt with that Newsweek cover on it.
Yes.
Of Martin Sheen holding a baby.
Oh my God.
Trying to block a bullet with a baby. Because I'm like, that is a conversation starter if I've ever seen one.
Absolutely.
That magazine cover.
It's incredible.
I can see why this lends itself to a TV series because his power is very like Monster of the Week. Like you can solve a case every week type of thing.
It's like sort of like Monk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of what they did with the movie because the movie was like a bunch of different short stories.
Right.
It was just very strange. Huh. The movie ended and I was like, the Martin Sheen thing was like 30 minutes at the end of the movie. It didn't feel like there was like one plot that carried you all the way through. It was very odd to me.
I think it was supposed to be like Christopher Walken coming to terms with this power. I think it's supposed to be given like this great responsibility and not wanting to deal with it at first. You know, it's like the classic hero's journey.
Yeah.
But it's also not cohesive enough to really make sense. I think that's the one kind of consistent thing throughout.
It's so rare, especially nowadays, it's so rare to see. Usually I see a TV series that's like 12 episodes and I'm like, this 12-hour TV series could have been a 1.5-hour movie. Uh-huh. This is a 1.5-hour movie that should have been a 12-hour series. Yeah.
Well, we'll do the Anthony Michael Hall Dead Zone early 2000s USA series next.
Perfect.
You guys, we'll get ready for 12.5 hours of recapping.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So not scary. Not scary. Jen, just one weird, real weird, bad scissor moment.
The scissor moment is brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved this retelling. I was fascinated by it.
Great.
And it made me want to watch The West Wing.
Perfect. That was I would say,
yeah, if this makes you want to watch any other Martin Sheen thing or any Christopher Walken thing or any Tom Skerritt thing, that's great. That's the point.
Yeah, also Tom Skerritt only in it for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, very brief.
Not enough Skerritt.
It really defanged David Cronenberg for me, too. I'm just going to go into all of his future movies.
This is what all of his movies are like, I think, is that you can just take that as fact.
Have you guys watched Crash?
No.
The Cronenberg version, not
no,
the...
I always get that confused. I always think that Cronenberg like corrected.
Sandra Bullock, whatever, like series of...
Yeah. Joseph Pena and everything.
Interwoven.
Or Michael Pena.
That's actually like extremely problematic. But the different Crash, no.
We haven't done it. There's a lot of Cronenbergs left for us to cover, and we need to space them out because, you know, usually
we just did his new one, Crimes of the Future.
Yeah, we've done The Fly and Crimes of the Future are the only two we've done so far. But someone did just ask us to add The Brood.
Yes. I think it's The Brood. Yeah.
To our list. And
terrifying.
Whenever someone's like, you guys have to do this movie, I get real nervous because there's a lot of options. And when someone's like, it's this one, I get anxious. So I'm sure at some point we will. Oh, maybe we'll make you guys watch it because you wanted to watch something intense and scary. And we gave you you get the Dead Zone.
Yeah, please come back. We'll do Eli Roth film next time. We'll do something really gonna be terrifying,
be upsetting.
Audition or something. Yeah,
we did audition. We've done that one. That's definitely my top five of that. I hated that.
Really upsetting. Really, really made me feel bad.
terrifying horror movie. I guess it's probably like a couple decades old. It's called The Notebook with Ryan Gosling.
We could try doing that one next
and see.
Honestly, I would recap The Notebook. Sure,
I'd love to rewatch The Notebook.
I'm a bird. Yeah. You're a bird.
It's like saying I'm a bird.
Birds. Wow. Well, guys, thank you so very much for joining us for this.
Thanks for
having
us.
Do you have any plugs? Tell us about Hey Riddle Riddle. Anything else you want to talk about for our listeners?
Yeah. Adele and I co-host a podcast with our other co-host, Aaron Keefe, called Hey Riddle Riddle. It's also a HeadGum podcast. We all came up in Chicago doing improv. So it is a podcast where we answer riddles and then do improv based on those riddles. And Emily is going to be on a upcoming episode. So if you...
Oh, my God.
If you love this podcast and you're like, where can I get more Emily? Then you can go check out our podcast and then just fall in love with both podcasts. Isn't that how all the cross promotion works?
And for anyone who's like, why wasn't Aaron on? Aaron was not on because she is terrified of horror films. She despises horror films.
So she would have loved this one.
Yeah, she could have done it. Who knew? Well, great. I think our only choice is to close out with the Christopher Walken voice, right? I think that's the option that we have in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we got to do it. Emily, do you think you can do it?
I'm going to try. Okay, so like the thing I think of when I try to do Christopher Walken is the cowbell thing, right?
Yeah.
I got a fever and the only prescription... It's more cowbell.
that was great.
Okay, that was... No, it wasn't great, but we'll take it. What was it? Don't go in the ice. Okay.
Don't from wake all of us, daddy.
From all of us here, right? Too scary. Didn't watch. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Cheddar sweets. Gotta have my cheddar sweets.
Cheddar sweets. Ooh, cheddar I love sweets. My cheddar sweets. He would love cheddar sweets.
He would.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And if one episode a week just is not enough for you, head on over to patreon.com/TSDW Podcast to become a patron and receive all sorts of extra goodies from us, including bonus episodes, trailer reactions, and more. And no matter what, we will see you right here next week for another episode. We love you so much. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.